Welcome back to the Free Play Arcade podcast. It's going to be mailbag number 25, our favorite podcast. I'm Chris Delp, community liaison of Free Play Arcade. I'm being joined by Arthur Williams, also community liaison. We just need to, I don't know, can we just drop? I'm Chris Delp, this is Arthur Williams.
Yeah, if they're watching this podcast, they probably know who you are.
Yeah, and this is the younger younger version. We went back in time, got the younger version of Corey Hyden, future CEO of Free Play Incorporated, Free Play Inc.
Or whatever. Yeah, Free Play Inc. Yeah, I was pretty excited when we filed our original incorporation documents, because instead of having to be Free Play Arcade Inc., we're mm-hmm. Free Play Inc. and then we have a DBA as Free Play Arcade. It seems kind of silly, but that actually makes me happy because we get some protection for Free Play Inc. and for Free Play Arcade. It's a whole thing.
So people won't just be willy nilly using the name Free Play Arcade.
Yeah,
Free Play. Never mind.
Don't get me started on that.
So, mailbag. Right. Before we do that, you're listening now on iTunes or YouTube or anywhere. So you can subscribe right now. Just click the subscribe button on whatever service it is, because Matt back there behind the camera puts it on every single service I have never heard of. They all have.
It's actually Gabby.
Apparently it was Gabby.
Yeah.
community liaisons don't actually see Gabby. So there's that.
Oh, no.
So that's a story for later, Gabby. Yeah, subscribe now. If you're on YouTube, there's an additional thing you can do. That little bell icon, it's sweet. I hear
Why
it's
is
good.
It a bell? Just so that it rings. That's the alarm. It goes bing, 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 bing.
Well, I think it gives you notifications, to be honest with you.
I get emails every time Matt uploads a video on our YouTube channel and it says there's a new... Maybe that has something to do with the bell?
Yes.
Maybe.
I think you hit the bell.
Everyone over there is shaking their head.
A number
head,
of
yes.
times.
They're
yes.
like, guys, don't act like y'all don't know how this works.
Yes, the Matt's shaking his head. The other person as well. It's awesome. Okay, so back to mailbag season 8.
Yeah, we're deep in mailbag. So number one, really quick, we have to knock this out. So we made a game of the week for one of the rarest games that we have, but we have a really hard time convincing people that it's rare. It's our Pac-Man Battle Royale. So what makes it rare is we have the Japanese version.
Yes.
In Richardson, Texas, and in Denton, Texas, we have the Japanese version. And
correct.
If you go watch that Game of the Week, we kind of go through the story, how blah, 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 Namco is testing. It was too hard for American audiences. They wanted it easier, softer, whatever. And they released an American version. And they mass marketed this American version. They made tons of them, tens of thousands probably. Mm-hmm. And they popped it up at most bars. And it's even that game is pretty good. Like, it's pretty fun still. Even that kind of lesser neutered version is fine. But when we started Free Play, we said we kind of always thought we're going to have to get that version because it's enjoyable and it's a good bar game. But then we found out that there's a Japanese version that allegedly I had never played it, obviously, allegedly went back to the original code that everyone said was too hard and had better controls. And you know, the corner rounding was better. You could play it like real Pac-Man instead of like some sort of ticket game style Pac-Man. It was what we heard. So we bought one of those. And yeah, I think that's true. They're very similar games, but I think that the Japanese version is better in every way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. American version has cup holders. That's really awesome. I wish ours had cup holders.
I can't read the kanji.
Right. Well, and yeah, you don't really understand what it's saying to you.
Right.
And we go into even in that Game of the Week how the Japanese version doesn't have cup holders because it's really uncool to have drinks in a Japanese arcade right on it.
Huh.
Even if you're smoking on the game.
Like, which they
yeah,
do.
Yeah, yeah. Even if you're like, confirm. Even if you're resting your cigarette on the game, that's kind of why the cup holder thing happened. But we're not necessarily saying that the American version is terrible. It is very similar,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's slightly worse than the Japanese version, which we went and we sourced for our customers. And that's the whole
right.
point. They made something like 300 for Japan. It was not very successful. That's the whole point. That's why it's a rare game of the week. Yes, we know you've seen something that looks like that in a lot of places. It's different. It might be slightly different depending on who you are. But yes. I wanted to make sure I addressed that because everyone keeps emailing me like, I played that at this bar randomly. I played it
right.
at this bar.
So the Japanese region release of Pac-Man Battle Royale is indeed rare. The one that you have played at Cinemark, not that rare.
Not rare.
The one that I own on Steam,
Also not rare.
Not the Japanese
most
version.
Most Steam games are not rare when you're buying them on Steam.
Right.
Turns out once it releases digital distribution, it's not rare. But right.
But even that one's not using the Japanese right. ROM set.
Well, and it's a big thing in the arcade community right now, trying to find this Japanese ROM set.
It's still a ROM set. Is that, it's is not, that a
well,
thing?
That's,
that
it's a computer. Anymore? It's a computer. It's an encrypted computer. So
all I know is what the 18-year-old me was pirating.
Right. So, and we have an American version still in the collection. I'm going to get rid of it because it's not quite as good, and I guess I'm not trying to be mean to anyone who has the American version. I'm just saying we went the extra mile, found two of the 300, so we own one, you know, not 1%, but like 8.76% or something of all Japanese Pac-Man Battle Royales, and they're here in DFW, Texas. Mm-hmm. We love them. We think they're awesome. That's it. That's all. That's all I want to say because. It's just not the same. It's not the same as the one you played. They made a lot of American versions. This one's different. It was later released. It reverted back to the code. That's the story. We really like the ones we have. That's all. So we're going to keep this party rolling. We're going to keep moving. We're going to go to the next question.
Question two of 7 or 2.5.
So this is it. And so Arthur's only been with the company. Have you been here a year?
September 21st was my first day. So
okay,
not yet.
So you've been however many months that is. Chris has been here more than a year. I've been here since the beginning. We had someone ask, what was the most difficult thing you've encountered at Free Play so far? And you, I mean, try to think of any story you want. Just, you know.
We should go backwards, yeah.
What have you encountered?
I got two. Moving elevator action death parade.
That's both of the two.
So this is cool. So up in this corner, there's going to be a link to our Akon Japanese arcade. We brought a game called Elevator Action Death Parade. And I had bought that a long time ago before I knew we were doing Akon. But I thought it was like a really cool game. And
it's awesome.
Of course, Elevator Action is like, you know, one of those classic games we try to have at some of our arcades. And Elevator Action Returns is now at Arlington crushing it.
And it's super fun. That is one of the most exciting games you can play.
I'm so pumped that it's crushing so hard. Yeah. Like, nothing makes me happier to see a Blast City with Elevator Action Returns. And people are like, yes, yes, yes.
That game crushed. Incredible. That game crushed. And then we didn't even realize that we didn't even have the second button hooked up, right?
Well, yeah, we were
because the one who played it before,
right? We were just winging it.
We still loved it, and then we added the second button. It's like the expansion pack.
It's even better. Yes. So, and then there's a later release that's in the same series called Elevator Action Death Parade, an actual light gun game. It's huge.
With
it has
real elevator action.
It has elevator doors that open and close. So that was heavy, is I guess what I'm getting at.
At Akon, that was the first game that I noticed that was a line waiting to play it. There were, you know, what, 36, I want to say, games that we brought?
Something like that,
yeah. And yes, most of them were in play, but that game had a line that was 10 people deep waiting to get to the front so they could parade some death.
Well,
it was incredible.
I'll have y'all know, because I somehow ended up at the setup for Akon due to like different employee problems and stuff. And the only game that didn't work when we turned them all on was Death Parade.
Oh.
So I got I learned a lot about how elevator doors work on an arcade game. Cause that was, turns out if both of the elevators aren't perfect, like the rollers and everything, the whole game will brick itself. And of course it's all in Japanese. Cause we have a Japanese version. So I'm sitting there with like Google Translate trying to figure out, and it's just like broken. That's the word that keeps.
Yeah.
So anyways, we got to fix it and we worked great. That was awesome. It's big and heavy, and we've
800
moved
pounds.
It, we've moved it a few
is
times.
It, is it really?
800. Literally,
yeah,
800
it is
pounds.
800 pounds. And it's,
I mean, that, I don't doubt it one bit.
It's terrifying.
It
to
is
move that
terrifying.
Thing And so we've recently bought a better truck, not a better truck, a different truck that has a better lift gate that will make moving that one around. Cause, this is complicated, but if you have familiar with box trucks with lift gates, there are like three different main versions. One that comes out and then expands a little bit. That's still pretty narrow. And there's the big hydraulic thing. We were using the little one to try to move this game around. Not good. It was hard. But we got it where it needed to be. Got it to Akon.
And
Arthur would like to ask for the Death Parade crane.
Just some kind of like construction equipment to move that thing around.
Aside from that, I would say the hardest thing working at the arcade is likely the fact that we're open, you know, from around noon until around 2 a.m. It can get kind of tiring if you have a long day.
It's exhausting, yeah. That's you know, like... not to steal your points, but I remember early in free play history working 11 a.m. till 3 a.m. or 10 a.m. till 3 a.m. shifts, just because we didn't have any employees yet. And at the time, like the first couple of times, it's so exciting. And then by like the third or fourth week, you're like, this is too hard. Like, it's so hard. It really does drain you in a way that because you stay up late occasionally, you think you can do, but it turns out when it's regular
every day. And then you're just like,
it'll get the best of you.
Yeah. I think it's afterwards that it gets to me. Like this moment right now, I have plenty of energy. I'm happy. I'm exactly where I want to be, doing exactly what I want to be doing. Later tonight, you're going to be doing Third Strike Thursday. That's going to be fun. You're going to be going to New York. That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's when I'm done. And it's like, okay, it's time to go home. Then it all just catches up to you. And it's like, wow, I came into the office at 10 a.m. It is now 2 a.m. And I'm in Denton. That's over an hour away from where I live.
Well, I do remember my very first speech during our 1 year at Richardson before we really knew where it was all taking us. And just saying that the very first thing is to thank the employees, because I don't think any of us thought working in an arcade would be so much work, so hard to do it right. And it really is still like it's a constant battle to try to get ahead of things and deliver the products that you want to deliver. Which that's one of the problems with all that, you know, best arcade ever thing. Like, we really do want our arcade to be the best arcade ever.
We care. We put in the work.
And
we absolutely do.
It takes hours. It takes work. It's tough.
Yeah.
All right, Chris.
For me,
difficult moment.
Well, for me, it's always emotional. So it's repeating, and it's, you know, a lot of times it's the question that what's your favorite game? Or no. It's the accusation that you don't care about this game or that game. Because I do care.
That eats you up, right?
It does. I do care about the people, the communities, the arcade itself, arcades in general, and each of the games. I love them all. Even ones that I like to kick in the nuts, like Dr. Mario. Like it's all in jest.
So, in an outsider's perspective, it was really interesting to watch, because you like were not like a hardcore Super Turbo player before Super Turbo community became like a thing. And people were like accusing you left and right of like, you just love Super Turbo. That's like your favorite game and stuff. And
I always look at that all the time. Yeah.
It was always weird from the outside, because it just turned out that the Super Turbo players were the ones that would show up.
Right.
Just religiously.
It coalesced around the game.
They really wanted to be there, and they wanted, you know, they wanted to see how far the community could take us. And, you know, now we have the largest Super Turbo community in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I see people complain. It hasn't been so much lately, but,
And it's not just that. You know, it's I got criticized on, I remember a stream watching out of Seattle where I got criticized for being a pinball guy. Like, it was a Super Turbo stream. Like, he doesn't really care. He's just a pinball player out there, right? So I love pinball more than I love fighting games. I get the opposite from pinball players all the time. I love Killer Queen. I love Miss. I've done the long play where I think we did a long play with Miss Pac. Is that correct?
Yes, you did.
Okay, so I've done the long play. That's my favorite game. That's the actual winner right there. Ms. Pac-Man from 1982.
If you could have the, you know, 50 people showing up regularly to play Ms. Pac, that you'd be cool with that too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not...
I love the sounds. If we have Carlos making pizza, yes, that's literally how I grew up. Eating pizza, playing Ms. Pac-Man.
So, it has nothing to do with the game. It's just...
But I still love them.
Well, right. And sometimes things become a big thing, and you want to make sure that you're doing everything you can to support that big thing.
Yeah, and I want to be as real with people as I possibly can. So I put my emotions out there. I put myself out there. Literally, I'm in public all the time. I'll talk to you about any game. I'll play any game I can with you. I will win and lose as I will win and lose. And yeah, it does hurt when it's like, well, you hate this game. Like,
right.
I don't.
Well, I mean, no matter how hard I've tried, our ice cold beer community is only like 3 or 4 deep. Like,
I have run an ice cold beer.
It
event.
Happens,
a couple
right?
of them.
Well, yeah, that was when I used to run the brewery events. That was my go to. I just make people, because I was good at it, and I'd be like, "Here's how 10 looks," and I get to show people. It was, you know.
Yeah, I streamed Richard rolling it.
So, I mean, the real thing is, we love if we've put the game on the floor, and that's the truth. Even if it's Atari Kangaroo or something, if we've put it on the floor, we love some part of it. And we're doing our part to support it by putting it out there. And the next step, if people like really want to have like a lot of attention on a game, it's for them to pay attention to it and get other people, you know, like, we can't just we can never force a community. And we've definitely learned that going. Like, we cannot just force people to like something. It's right. all about us doing what we can to support people as they find the things they like.
Yeah.
And we can introduce people to stuff. We just never know what's going to grow.
Yeah. And I love these games, and that's the hardest part is just dealing with the emotional ramifications of that. And it's not like I don't I'm gonna break down in tears over this, and we're gonna right. internet criticism or whatever. I'm not that fragile. But you know, this is all an effort of love and passion on my part, and the money, the getting paid. I did this before there was a paycheck involved. I'm just doing it because I love it. So that never like slows down. So just hearing those things, you know, they do take a toll, and not anything that I don't know where to put, but yeah.
Yeah. And when I got the question, like what's the worst part, like, or the hardest or something, it was so hard because I have so many, and that's actually the feedback. It can sometimes be the hardest. Like when we get a negative review and it's like just something that I have to investigate, and someone who just didn't like our product. And
well, it's the unfairly rare. Negative ones,
right? That, oh yeah, those right, really eat you up. And we've had early in our existence, it was extra hard because when we had like 40 reviews and we'd get like someone who's just like, you know, unfairly negative, it would be crushing. Now that we have, I mean, Free Play Richardson right now has almost 10,000 reviews. Mm-hmm. Free Play Arlington is close to 6, and Denton's getting close to their first 1,000. Like, we have so much feedback now.
How many of those did you buy?
None. Well, that's actually, you know, that's an interesting point, though, because if you ever, like, look at Dave & Buster's, for example, I will stand by, I think that Dave & Buster's bought the majority of their social media presence, because when Dave & Buster's makes a post to their 250,000 followers and all of their positive reviews and stuff, they get, like, one or two people that click like on their posts. And I guarantee you, if you delivered one of my posts to whatever fraction of 250,000 that Facebook will do, we'd have a ton. So I don't think those are real people, but all of ours are real. And that's actually what's really cool is there's some smaller competitors that you can see when they buy them, right? Because you can see them getting 1,000 or 2,000 or 10,000 people.
Yeah, when they spike like,
well, you like, they'll go
20,000% in one day.
Right. And you can see when it happens, and you can see when they are. I don't know so much if people are buying reviews anymore. And yeah, and we've had competitors who are not open yet, who are clearly like faking reviews and stuff. It's always really irritating when someone opens and they have a like 400 five-star reviewed
arcade.
They have 400 five-star reviews
history
before
coming
they open
2021.
Like, we're gonna get there, guys. Yeah. No, it's it was really tough. And you know, like, for example, Free Play Richardson right now has more Facebook likes than I ever would have possibly imagined. They're almost at 50,000. And we have never, you know, I don't even know it. I mean, I know you can buy them, but I wouldn't really know like how you do that.
I wouldn't either.
But
Google probably.
What's really cool is we can compare our accounts to people that have like 250,000, 300,000, and we have so much more engagement that I have to assume either the other people are terrible or they bought likes. So yeah, that, but you know, the real ones that came that were just totally unfair. Or, you know, it really sucks. Like, one of the hard parts was when we had that weird racist contingent just decide to bomb our reviews.
That was hard. Yeah, you're right.
And that really, like, it hurt
me. When was that? I must not been
here. It was before your time. Yeah. It was right after Free Play Arlington opened.
Yeah, it was maybe a month or two after Free Play Arlington
opened. And we were anticipating, like, you know, bumps in the road of opening a new business, and you're going to have, you know, new employees across the board, a new venue, everything's, you know, new and old at the same time. So we got to like build it all up. And yeah, some of these reviews, you know.
Yeah, it was weird. It was a weird time because it was extra, like, I don't know how to respond to someone who's just being racist against like an employee or just in general. Or, you know, just, I mean, maybe being unfair to him. Like, and there was like this weird day where we got, you know, like 30 or 40 negative reviews, all mildly racist. So it was some sort of bomb, racist.
And where do you put like a review that has like something that, because you're actively investigating these reviews, trying to figure out where the meat is, where's the actual problem? And this is Free Play. There is no problem with a minority working with us or well, for us. Right, that's not a problem.
Well, I mean, we actively encourage anyone
absolutely.
To work for
Free Play. Absolutely. Like, so any words to that is stupid. Now, you didn't, your defender button didn't work, and you have a problem with the minority at the front door. Like,
well, yeah, that was, so that was,
it's what really was, hard to parse that out.
What was kind of weird was, so Facebook ended up coming in and they removed almost all of them, but not all of them, because the ones that used, you know, actual phrases and words that are openly racist and known as racist,
right?
Facebook would take those away, and maybe the ones that were overly hostile, but then Facebook left some behind that didn't happen to use those words, but we knew were from like the same group that same day.
Mm-hmm.
And those are still there. It's kind of interesting because it was just, it was really a weird thing to deal with at the time. But I don't, you know, in general, having so much judgment about what we're doing, that's kind of hard. Like I was counting this weekend, we had more than 50 reviews on Saturday, and I was like, oh, and it was really cool because we went almost till 10 p.m. before we got our first 4-star, and all the others were 5-star, and that's all like, that's really rewarding, right? But at the same time, it's this thing that's captivating to me to make sure that we're always delivering the best possible product. But you know, I had a lot of hard times at Free Play. I opened the first one, and Chris was there. We had sold beta test tickets, mm-hmm. and we had to move it around a lot because, I mean, opening a business is hard. Permits are weird. And actually figuring out what your timeline is going to be is tough. And we were trying to do it without the
experience. I was going to be there no matter what.
Well, and so we opened, but my favorite plumber I've ever hired, a very alcoholic dude who was bizarre in all of his behavior, who I love. I don't see him anymore, but I loved him at the time. So we had our partitions for our restrooms that come in like 4 days before. And he said that he did all the work on the tile to get them installed because you have to like drill in the tile, get all the anchors and everything. And so it came that day, and it turns out that he had forgot about how to like do them. Like he just like he was. And so that whole day, Richard, myself, and this drunk plumber were trying to figure out. Now, I mean, because we're opening our first business, our plumber was actually really talented, but yeah, he was a little bit off the reservation.
Mm-hmm.
He was rough. It was bad. And so we were sitting there trying to put together. Long story short, we ended up having to have a door monitor because the partitions were not on the wall of our restrooms when we had public paying customers that have come in. So
I remember hearing about that story. I know I was there that day because I was there the entire beta test. I was there, the first one there and the last one to leave at Alamo Drafthouse Richardson that day. I didn't actually use the restroom there. So I never experienced that.
What's really funny is we actually ended up at open, we had none fully mounted. Mm-hmm. By close, we had two. So
that actually sounds.
We were getting better. And then it turned out, we had all sorts of issues. But you know what? The real thing is my background's in making events work, even in adversity. So I think it was still a fun beta test. I think it was a fun grand opening party. Like, I feel like everyone had a lot of fun coming. And we learned a lot about what we were getting into. So there's lots of hardship. You know, and just to get quickly meta, the biggest hardship is probably my shifting job responsibilities and trying to learn to be good at all of that.
I bet that's true.
Because, you know, like I have, when I was first just like kind of like the manager / utility employee at Free Play Richardson, where I'd run around, you know, make sure that our sandwiches were as good as they should be, or our pizzas, or fixing games, or hopping behind the bar and clearing a rush. There, I always knew exactly what my job function was, and it was very straightforward, which was just to make sure everything was working well. But you know, now that we have three, almost four locations, almost, you know, and with hopefully 5, 6, 7, however many coming, and learning how to be a boss of like a lot of people, you know, it's harder than I expected, and that's definitely been the biggest challenge.
Has it become easier? Have you, as you've gone along?
I think I've learned a lot.
Yeah.
I think I've become better at doing it, and that's kind of like the weird thing. Like when you're a kid and you think you're going to be successful in everything, you just think you're going to be good at everything. Or at least I did. I always thought, of course I'll be a good boss, or, you know, like, of course I'll, you know, be a leader of men and a CEO, a titan of industry. And like, when you start to like get opportunities to do that, it's a lot harder. Like it's a lot. I didn't know what I was doing. So that's been really hard managing, you know, personalities, people. Cause like as a tech, like from my background and kind of in my heart, I'm a tech, like arcade games, you fix them and they're working and stuff. But like, managing employees is a lot more complicated. They're people. They're actual people.
Yeah.
I mean, things like scheduling and making sure everyone's happy with their position and making sure that you're being, you know, above and beyond fair to all your employees and making sure that's like, it's a lot of work. It's a lot harder than I expected. But
yeah, for me, like managing the workload that I always knew would be a lot and it's always something I love, and it is a lot. Like, it's one of those things, like, you know, whenever I was growing up and they were like, you know, it's really hard being so rich that, like, you don't want for anything. Like some, there's things that go with that as well. Like, I play video games for a living in some part, and it's a lot of work, and, like, cry me a river. That's what the 7-year-old inside me is like. Cry me a river. It's you work 7 days a week. You're playing video games. Keep doing it. Right. And I still have that. And, like, there's this constant fight inside me that's just like, go home, go to sleep, go say hi to Allison. No, keep playing games. Like, it's a constant war. And I am on both sides of it inside my own head. And I love it. And I'm doing absolutely what I love. And I still don't know what to do with all that. It gets easier in that, like, I've made relationships, and, like, my friends are really in the building with me. And every time I walk into a free play anything, you know, it's like Norm from Cheers. Like, I'm home.
It is.
But I'm not home. Yeah. It's so weird.
It is. No, I think that is true. One of the things is it's harder than we all thought, but also, like, more rewarding and everything.
Like, it's something I'm not wanting to change.
We're doing something really special. But yeah.
It's regardless of how long the hours are, it feels great to work here. Yeah. And I have a great time every time I'm here.
Yeah.
Like, it's fantastic. It's a great job.
So this question from Instagram. Instagram. Let's see.
How
many Kyrie Celeste wants to know, what happened to Blueprint? Well, Camber, it's right here.
You know what? That's actually a more interesting question, though, is we get it all the time, right? Like, where did X game go? And why did X game go? And I mean, that's the harder question. Like, why was that the one that got cut? Like,
sure. Why was Blueprint the one?
You know, and Blueprint's one of my favorite games.
I know it is.
And
that's why it's an interesting question to me personally. And obviously Camber, because she cares.
It's super hard. But, you know, one of the things that I've learned and I've taken really seriously is the, like, art of building an arcade and, like, an arcade floor of games.
Curating.
And sometimes Blueprint doesn't get to survive. One of the things is Blueprint's not very approachable.
No.
It's really cool to have in short bursts, but if it's just always a fixture, it loses some of its magic too.
It has sweet music.
Right.
Yeah, I figured this is going to play for a few seconds, and then I realized that you actually have to play it for it to die. So it's
like, what did I do? But no, I mean, it's any choice we make, it's because we had to make a difficult decision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and people might get upset, like, why we always have Miss Pac on the floor and not necessarily, like, Ladybug and all of those other games.
Man, that's an obvious question for me.
Miss Pac was an absolute perfect version of the maze.
There's like 10 games that you have to have in a retro arcade.
But it's also that makes people feel more comfortable when they come in, because everyone knows Miss Pac-Man, everyone knows Galaga, and there's a few others, and people see them, they go play, and that whets their appetite. That's what gets them hungry to go explore.
Sometimes people are mad that those 10 games aren't there, even when they are there.
Right. Well,
that's how much they're needed.
Particularly in Arlington, right, they may not see that Centipede is on a cocktail table.
And Defender,
and so that's frequently.
That's Defender and Richardson, right? Because Defender, we have a cocktail Defender in. Like, Defender's like a whole its own thing. Like, I love Defender. I think it's a great game. We can't have it at every arcade because it's the least approachable game that might have ever been made. Like, Blueprint is more approachable than
Defender or Stargate. Which do you like more?
Defender.
I don't know that I've played. I'm sure I've played, like, an emulated version of Stargate, but I don't know if I've actually sat down and played Stargate.
I had a port of it. Rather, my dad had a port of Stargate in his IBM XT or some computer.
Ooh.
And so I played an awful lot of Stargate as a kid because it had like three games. That, Pac-Man, Frogger, and Donkey, four games. Donkey, you try to be in not the lane with the donkey with your race car. It's a great game.
Mm.
Stargate, I really love that game, but it gets... No one likes it more than Defender.
Just the IBM PC version put into an arcade. Now, we need the...
It's got to have the black and orange monitor. You're doing it wrong.
Yikes. Correct. It also needs the keyboard, but we need the thick keyboard, the one that makes a loud clacking sound whenever you press the buttons.
Yep, definitely. Yes. No, you know what? Stargate's never been on the floor. We've got like...
More than arcade perfect.
We've got like six Stargates in our collection, and we've never put one on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Only because if you've... In the arcade, Stargate is slightly harder than Defender.
And Defender's already hard enough.
Defender's brutal. So, I mean, as an arcade guy, I want to make sure we kind of have them. We make sure that they exist. So, I mean, like, Arlington has an upright. Richardson has a cocktail, both dedicated. Both beautiful, both playing great.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, The arcade people get mad at me for not having like 16 versions of Defender and Stargate and like, but it just, it's hard. It's difficult. And there's a strict learning curve. So that's the kind of thing, like we have some of those games and we make sure we feature them, but all of our games can't be that.
Yeah. I know we have had five different versions of Street Fighter 2 requested.
Right. Well, yeah. We were having that chat.
World Warrior. Right?
Who?
World Warrior. Many people, right? Oh, I take that back. Six versions. We've had six versions requested quite often. World Warrior, Champion Edition, Rainbow Edition.
Rainbow. All right.
The one I played on Super Nintendo.
Right, that's the big
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Hyper Fighting.
Of course.
And Super Turbo.
And no one's requested Super. What does that tell you?
No one has ever requested Super, and no one requests Hyper Anniversary Edition. Go figure.
Well, I don't think most people know Hyper Anniversary exists.
Hyper was interesting.
It's like 10 years, 15 years later.
Yeah, like it was the it might be the last CPS2 that was made.
Yeah, it came out post CPS3, which is weird.
Yeah. Well, I think that was, you know, actually kind of a cool thing Capcom did, I guess.
It
yeah.
is a kind
like
of cool
a,
thing.
Like a Capcom going. It is, like, it is did something neat.
No,
it's
was,
a cool concept. Cool concept. Right.
It was the 15th anniversary and is it 03, 04? One of those.
Yeah, yeah, I think it was 03.
Yeah, it had all. It purported to have all previous versions of
just
the characters.
Just the way you remember.
Well, yeah, except not quite.
Yeah, well, it just turns out that that's not possible.
Right, that's the point.
It's, you're running it on different hardware. They're just trying to make analogs as close as they can to what you're used to. And yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of Street Fighter. You know, we launched Free Play without a Super Turbo on the floor, right?
Correct.
Yeah. We had Hyper Fighting and X-Men versus Street Fighter.
Even Hyper Fighting wasn't on the floor initially. That
was
first,
it not?
That first day, no.
Oh, well, yeah.
It got there in short order, like within a week.
So what actually happened there is our truck broke down as we were opening, and we actually opened Free Play with about 56 games and then had another 12 to 15.
Do you have the list of 56? We'll have to do like trivia game show game again where we just quiz people on them.
I might be able to. Oh, and you know, there's a couple on there, such as Super Cobra and Lunar Lander that were launch games that didn't really last. And they're still both in the collection. And people ask all the time, like, where did they go? And they weren't ultra popular. There's no demand to get them back out. And so we either fixed them and stashed them until we needed them. Or they just are still sitting there waiting to be fixed. Like it's been a, you know, that first month, obviously, I think it had more games that came off the floor that didn't make it back just because we were so busy, so desperate to get working games on the floor. And then as we, you know, staffed up, as we teched up, and as we all got better at teching, we got better at keeping games on the floor. So that's tough.
What do you think about when, I know you have been moved by individual comments before, individual requests by specific games. What do you think when you get a request like, you know, my favorite game was Blueprint over here, or maybe Crazy Climber, you know, and you put it out there, and you know, like, it's going, here it is, I made it, I got it for you, I got it because I had you in mind, but I know it's not going to last, it's going to be rotated off at some point, it's just not going to be the most popular, but here's your time. How does that feel? Like,
well, I mean, to me, that's kind of like what we're trying to do.
Because I wouldn't be surprised if this goes back on the floor for another 6 month period or whatever.
So. I'm expect it to, honestly. We rotate games with enough frequency to where we'll try to get your favorites out.
Right.
It's actually become harder because our collections become better. Like,
right.
We had a really good collection when we opened.
But we're opening in Fort Worth, so we're expanding even now.
Well,
so.
That's the nice thing about expanding is, like, no one in Fort Worth has probably played Blueprint. If we threw it on the floor at Fort Worth, it would take 6 months before we burned people and, like, got that into their brains and then moved it away.
What you're really telling me is Free Play Paris, Texas is going to have the sickest lineup ever.
Well, Blueprint and Stargate.
And it's
in
really
one
tough
building.
Because we curate, but we also do listen to the people. Mm-hmm. We also pay attention to what they play and what they like. And I think that that's kind of like a weird thing in business right now because, you know, Steve Jobs is famously like, you don't give them what they ask for. You give them what they really want. Like, you figure that out and then give it to them. I'm
getting a new phone. I don't want this crap.
I'm not really that, you know, arrogant or anything like that. But I do think that it's important both to make sure that we're exploring the rare stuff that people won't necessarily ask for, but also to make sure that we explore the stuff that people ask for and see how we can deliver it in a good way. And that's been a big challenge. I mean, games like DDR, right, that we have.
Yeah.
We just took to Akon, and we rebuilt before we put out there. It was a brutal thing to maintain while we're out there. And then, of
even
course,
for a weekend.
Well, right. And, yeah. And then, of course, we had, you know, people on the forum come on and like, or on Facebook and be like, this is how you should have done it. I heard it was total junk and stuff like that. And we actually, it worked great, pretty well the whole time. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of effort there and before.
I'm somewhat worried still that the busted DDR that was next to our stuff is what people were talking about.
Well, I don't know what was going on. It was weird to get that feedback because we're sitting there, we replaced the sensors and we're sitting there with a huge bundle of sensors, just replacing them as they
literally go on our table when we did that podcast.
Right, as they break. Yeah, yeah. And if you look at our podcast from Akon, there's a DDR sensor just sitting there because we were replacing them as they broke, as they had issues, anything that was a little weird. And it was a big learning experience. And it was actually really disheartening, right, to talk about it later and be like, I think I know how to fix this in a better way, and to have the DDR people come on there and be like, don't touch it, don't mess with it, we know what we're doing. And I don't think that anyone really fully understands what it's like to operate a game at Free Play, because that's the whole other thing we're dealing with right now is no retro arcade in the country. And I'll bet whatever it takes, it gets as much play on their games as Free Play does. I know I'm aware of every other retro arcade. I'm aware of our numbers, and I'm aware of most people other numbers. Our games get a ton of play. I mean, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of people hitting our games, each of our games, every single day, running through credits. So it's really tough. And whenever I say that I think we need to reinvent the wheel, it's really because we do. Mm-hmm. We really feel, and it's all about, you know, just delivering that game. But yeah, we haven't figured out DDR. I think we can figure out DDR in terms of making it work in a busy environment. I don't know if we can ever figure out the music.
Right. That's the challenge.
If you've ever been to a Free Play, we've got loud music, right? It's part of the experience is having these 80s jams going, and sometimes you can hear the game's fine, sometimes it's really loud, but there's a ton of people, like, it's sometimes that's part of the fun. But DDR, you're supposed to be listening to the music,
right? Modern rhythm games have taken out the dancing elements where you're jumping around and added headphones,
right? Well, yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of, you know, rhythm games that are just hand play with headphones,
right?
Beatmania and cross beats that we have,
which is about the only way I can think of really maintaining that in a environment where you're busting out the 80s jams.
Well, and one of the things we learned, especially with rhythm games, is how much fun it is to serve those to the general public. Because watching someone experience poppin' music Sunny Park for the first time was so much fun. Delivering it to people who are experienced with those games, not as rewarding, because like, I had like 30 messages or comments or questions about why we chose Sunny Park. Right. And like, I'm like, I think Sunny Park's the best example to bring to an anime convention. And people were like, yeah, but it's not X, Y, and Z. And it, like, those things really add up like on your soul. So DDR, we haven't figured out, but lots of challenges in this job and lots of interesting stuff like where games go. We never want to retire a game permanently. I've regretted every game I've ever sold. So if you played a game at Free Play and it disappeared, it's still probably coming back.
You know, you're talking about like the wrong version or whatever, the wrong version for an enthusiast, right? I actually have a question for the audience as an enthusiast of an odd version of a game that we have. We have in our collection since day one at Free Play Richardson, NBA Maximum Hang Time. So I have a question for the audience. How do you unlock the ABA ball in NBA Maximum Hang Time? You have the entire internet at your disposal. If you can find the answer to that, please email it to me, chris@freeplayinc.com.
Here's
the
looking
ABA
for
code in NBA Maximum Hang Time. I want to play with that ball. It is a code in NBA Hang Time.
But not in Maximum, maybe?
It is probably a code in NBA Maximum Hang Time, but we don't know it.
Interesting.
Nobody knows it that I'm aware of.
Well, and that's one of those beautiful things about arcades.
It's like the EJ Bean menu that they found in Mortal Kombat like 25 years later. As far as I know, like people think of the NBA Jam series. NBA Jam, yes. NBA Jam Tournament Edition, yes. NBA Hang Time, I kind of remember that. NBA Maximum Hang Time, a lot of people didn't realize that was an actual thing.
Right.
Huh.
And NBA then Showtime came out, yeah.
Right, but NBA Maximum Hang Time is indeed the game that we have our league matches on. So we do care about and love this game. Let me tell you, I played it for 24 hours straight. It's awesome.
Right.
I can never play as the ABA ball that I know is in it because the CPU uses it during the attractive foot.
You can
sequence.
See it, you just don't know how.
Really intriguing.
It's in the game.
Well, and you know, like,
I can tell you right now, it's not on GameFAQs. I just looked.
For example, maximum hang time. You know, we've killed ourselves keeping on.
I know the developers. The they don't know either.
It was very hard to keep that on the floor, Richardson. And we now it's kind of like the techs, like all they want to do is make sure that they keep maximum hang time out because we have GMTE at our other locations, and we even have a GMTE over at one of the breweries that we partner.
Shrimp Scampi will go to war over keeping maximum hang time.
But I think maximum hang time is awesome.
Also, they have the best team name I've ever heard of.
So says Deadless Shrimp. Literally on Twitter, you can check.
All right, so
I mean, was rooting for him.
That's kind of, I guess, the long, weird, convoluted conversation about what happens to games when they disappear off the floor. Mm-hmm. And you'll see them pop up, but we really do care about rotation. I think one of the things that's been coming up, mostly on Facebook lately, is it seems like the rotations at Free Play have slowed down. And this month, that's true. We did a small rotation this month, but if anyone is noticing what our hours have done, this month we've been opening at 1 p.m. instead of 3 p.m.
We're talking Richardson? Man, and we got Killer Queen.
Well, that's
we've
the thing.
Had a dark Richardson strike. Has pretty big changes, but
well,
yeah.
So after Akon, we had to rebuild both Richardson and Arlington because we'd changed those a little bit. We'd taken like 4 games from Arlington or 5 games from Arlington to Akon. And so Richardson got like a kind of a makeover. Mm-hmm. And it really does feel like not like a whole new arcade, but it feels totally different. Like, mm-hmm. especially those of us, like the 3 people at this table who go there all the time. I walk through there now, I'm like, this is totally interesting. I like how this feels. Like, that. It's really fun doing that. But yeah, I mean, Richardson received a brand new Killer Queen, its third versus City. Important changes. Pingo's back. That's really big.
Yep.
Pingo's fun.
Got to lead with that one.
Right. I mean, maximum hang time actually had left the floor for a minute because we had to figure out how to fix it. It's back.
It was gone for like 2 days.
Yeah, we're still working on it. It's a whole... I mean, all of those games are hard. But yeah, so...
I played a full game 2 days ago.
The 1 p.m. open has been a challenge. Just because a lot of our game movements happened between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. And those 2 hours are a lot of time, especially if you think about having to, you know, start your day at a normal, reasonable hour and then go from our Richardson headquarters to Arlington or to Denton.
And still have to prep for open.
Right, and get the arcade ready.
You don't just flip the switch and say, hey, come in, everybody.
Right, and well, and the other thing is when you move a game, you never know if it's going to turn right on. There's all sorts of complications.
That's one of the most fun things about moving a game.
So we have...
It worked flawlessly. Then wherever you put it on, it's been jostled.
I'm sure the players are going to have lots of sympathy for you there.
I know.
and Arlington in particular has been tough on that because Arlington has a very, very rough power grid. It's not our building. Yeah. It's downtown Arlington being in near constant brownout conditions. And oh my God. Like, I mean, we're dealing with that stuff on a daily basis. But rest assured, if you're watching this and it's not July anymore, you should be seeing games very soon. Mm-hmm. If it is still July, it's a lot harder to do it at 1 p.m. So we're kind of... not doing it. We're not able to do as much. We've definitely improved lineups. We've rotated stuff.
If you want just a brand new game, like I can recommend Josh Rylander's Journey to Journeyman on Wednesdays. He's been adding a brand new, well, new to us game that we all just sort of discovered together.
True deep cuts kind of games.
Super deep cuts. And, like, I've never heard of a single one that he put out there.
And that might be one of the best things that we've kind of discovered in adding all the Versus Cities, right? Because the Versus Cities are designed from their inception to be kind of utilitarian cabinets to run a bunch of different JAMA games. And so being able to have those out there, and they're just designed, run those common inputs, everything like that. It's been a lot easier for us to go ahead and experiment with those JAMA games. Whereas
have event games, basically.
Right. Being able to, because moving a whole blueprint cabinet for an event, hard.
Yeah, might not turn on again.
Right. Moving a game board, plugging it in, not as hard. So those have actually gone a long way. And I really love having the Astros at Denton, the Versus, and the various candies at Arlington and at Richardson. It's made it a lot more fun to be able to explore. And there's a lot of stuff that came out in the 90s that most people have never played. So we've been doing stuff like that. And yeah, every Wednesday, it's called Journey to Journeyman.
His concept is he puts out a fighting game that none of us have ever heard of. So or there's
just a competitive game. He didn't
Only
once.
Arthur right. has won the Evo right. Championship of. Everybody else has never played the game.
I was thinking Attax was on there, and that was, you know, the board game.
That's
and
true.
A
That's
lot
true.
Of fun.
Well,
and yes. I've heard of that one as well. But
well, I mean, Attax.
But yeah, he highlights the game, and specifically, he wants people who have never played it to come out, and we all discover the game together. So, and it's been a fun experience every time I've been able to attend it. And I mean, I would be a P1 if I didn't have occasional events in Arlington that kept me away.
Last night we had about 8 or so people, maybe 10, playing Akatsuki Blitzkampf.
I heard that's a fighting game with a tank as a character.
The tank is whom I play, because I can't not pick a tank if the game allows me to pick a tank.
Well, what
is talking about a guy like Zangief. He has extra health and...
No, I'm a tank. I got treads. I got a cannon that shoots lasers. He's a tank. He jumps and then splashes.
It reminds me a lot of that Akon game. I mean, it's different, but Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
Oh, yeah.
Where you have the double player. Like
the giant dude, Golden Lighton and X whatever, yeah.
So we are definitely still exploring at free play.
Someone asked Josh for a game where they take, like, I want a fighting game where they take two grandmothers and tie them together, and then we fight with them.
The closest I can come up with is Metro Melee, which does have two grandmothers.
There are a lot of grandmothers in
that.
That's a sequel to a game where they were tied together.
Oh, is it?
Oh, the first Power Instinct has that? Oh, I did not know that.
Yep.
Wow.
I think
that was a SNES game.
Next question on the on the series.
Oh, breaking news. We have time for one more question.
I just was.
Two and a half. That was my over-under. I'm
about to do it. Well, now I just had it up and I've lost the entire train because y'all interrupt. All right, so one thing that's been coming up a lot is pinball and kind of old pinball, and we've talked about this a lot. And really, the whole Jersey Jack, Pirates of the Caribbean thing, it all kind of created this crux where. We don't have as much old pinball on the floor, right?
Uh-huh.
And then we complain a lot about Pirates of the Caribbean. And
right.
The question is, will we ever be happy with pinball at this table?
Pinball will always break.
Right. Well, I guess we spend a ton of tech hours, but what are we really looking for in pinball to satisfy it? Because we've been so negative, and it keeps coming up that how brutally mean we are to these pinball companies.
I am happy with pinball every time all the pinball machines are working as they are intended to work.
Wow. Never. That's
so
harsh words from Arthur Williams.
Before we open,
well,
all the machines are turned off.
I think I have one next door that I have finished that is fully working at this exact moment.
Excellent. What machine is that?
I don't... Brand new something.
Black Knight?
Maybe.
Wizard of Oz?
Who knows?
I don't know.
Let me address each of the major pinball manufacturers and tell... All games that I absolutely adore from them. Spooky Pinball. I love Total Nuclear Annihilation. I know there's occasional issues with, you know, the upkeep and whatever, and that's its own criticism. But when I play that game, it's magic, and it taught me how to play pinball. Total Nuclear Annihilation, Spooky Pinball, 10 out of 10. Can't recommend you play it enough. For Stern, there's a lot of good Sterns out there that are worth playing. Every time I go to Free Play Denton, I love Aerosmith Pinball. It's another one of those stupid IP ripoff games with a toy in the middle. For whatever it is, that game plays like magic to me. I love that it launches the ball into the toy box and spits them all back out at me with multi-ball. It's not too complex. It's not too simple. I do have an affinity for early 80s and before Aerosmith. It's right there for me. I love everything I've played about Aerosmith Pinball. That's a Stern release. Good job on that, guys. And Jersey Jack. This is going to be weird. I really like Pirates.
Right.
Pirates is incredible. I'm just not happy with how it showed up.
Well, not happy with that.
To be honest, we've had to do a lot of weird work with Pirates. And I think that clearly the initial quality was lacking.
Uh-huh.
Just because...
Well, yeah, it didn't turn on.
Well, we had two
units... The
balls
would get locked underneath.
I think that's a very fair criticism,
We had two units show up, both that had issues that prevented us from playing them on our first day, which is not cool. Not cool because Jersey Jack is a premium line of pinballs. They're some of the most expensive in the game. But yeah, Pirates is a cool game. It's really...
It's super cool.
It's engrossing, right? Like, it feels totally different than a lot of pinball, which I guess that's the thing. I don't think I could criticize too much. I guess I would rather have a good game than necessarily a reliable game. And that's some of the stuff that Stern has said. They're like, yeah, there might be terrible games, but at least they'll turn on. Like, I mean, that's like Stern's argument. Yeah.
Jersey Jack machines tend to suffer from being overly ambitious. Yeah. I like that. As someone who works for a company that is overly ambitious and works extra hard, I like it. And does that mean that there's some crazy things that happen in all those unique parts? Yes, it does. But man, when I actually get to hit play and, you know, the game works, Pirates, pretty fun.
Well, and I mean, like, we do more old games than most. And I think the truth is we really just like interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the reason we go so hard at Stern is just because it's the same game repeated a lot.
Yes, yeah.
Correct.
Because they have the same parts. They have to reuse them. It's a business, blah, blah, whatever. I don't care.
I literally block copy my description every time we do Stern as a...
I'm sure they all love that.
As a monthly pinball. I mean, I changed the name of the toy in the middle, but other than that, it's the same. And I'm giving them the same treatment that they give us, so... I have criticisms, but you know, I certainly have good things to say in that I have enjoyed some Stern products, and on that list is definitely Aerosmith Pinball. And it's not just limited to that. You know, I played Star Wars the other day. I it's overly complex in my opinion, and still a heck of a lot of fun.
But I'll go ahead and say I like original concepts. I hate tired intellectual property that's been reused and rehashed. Mm-hmm. That's why I criticize modern pinball so much. Mm-hmm. Because you've got Dialed In, Total Nuclear Annihilation, nothing from Stern. I mean, Black Knight is the closest they have
to... That's existing IP.
Right, well, it's existing IP,
you're right, it's the closest they got.
That's the closest they have.
Whoa, Nelly.
Oh, dang. You're right.
You forgot.
Oh, man, I don't...
I'm sorry.
I can't even remember if that was based on anything, and I can't believe you've done this.
I like Denton Heat.
Right, Denton Heat, yeah.
See, Denton Heat's great.
We made our own, so... Yeah.
If I had to pick my favorite pinball tables that are on the board, on the field right now, I think Bride of Pinbot is my favorite in Arlington. And Denton, it's
Launch
either...
Launch Game Richardson, actually.
Yeah. Oh, was?
Yeah.
Oh.
That was our...
Along with Pinbot, too.
Yeah, one of our... We had both Black Knights, both Pinbots, and something else. The story changes a lot, because it was Super Mario, but it became Super Mario 2nd. And I can't remember exactly. Whirlwind, maybe. I don't like those. Were all right
there.
Yeah,
I can't
remember. Fishtails came not that long ago.
It wasn't Fishtails, but it was all in there somewhere.
So
yeah,
sorry.
Bride of Pinbot's my favorite in Arlington. In Richardson, Medieval Madness, is that still on the floor right now? Because I haven't
played
in a couple. It's
Richardson and Denton
in a couple weeks.
Yeah,
in Denton, my favorite though was the Shadow. That is so fun. I really like the Shadow.
That's James's favorite, too.
Oh, it is?
I mean,
good taste, James.
That version of the Shadow is really special, too. Like, that one is in such great shape. We found it with such low plays that we were able to free play quality it right away instead of, you know, a lot of times we'll find a pinball that's had 50 or 60 or 100,000 plays and have to try to rebuild it. But the Shadow, I think there was only, like, 500 plays. So we got that one before it could be run by other operators so that we could really tighten it up and fix it. So that's one. I mean, that one's playing great.
Honorable mention to Adam's Family, which right now
Denton.
Is in Denton. It wasn't Richardson. That was a while ago. Now I think about it.
It was at Richardson, Arlington, then Denton. It's done the route. Everywhere. I mean, it's a fun game. It's doing well in Denton, so we don't want to move it. But no, I think that my biggest complaint is really intellectual property. I like new stuff. I like interesting stuff. Stories built into stuff.
That's why we're mentioning Medieval Madness and Attack from Mars.
But Dialed In is just so fantastic of a new property for pinball. Like, it makes a lot of sense, and it's fun.
The interesting thing about Dialed In, I think most pinball players' complaints about it is it's so different from most pinballs. And if I go and play Dialed In, it's like... I cannot think of a pinball that's similar to Dialed In.
I cannot either.
All of the shots are different. The way they use the loops. Everything is different. So
the lines of sight are different. Yeah. Like, I can't really see the back left ramp that I'm aiming for.
Like, I think about how Total Nuclear Annihilation is like pinball...
concentrated. Well, what pinball is.
It is like... I mean, it's taking all the tools from modern pinball and making an old-style pinball with it, which just makes for insanity. Dialed In, and so that was a spooky property. Dialed In was like, this is Pat Lawler making his dream game with unlimited resources and everything, And it plays unlike any other pinball before, and I love it for that. I
was so excited. I think that was the first new pinball machine you put out too.
It was.
And it was so much fun when you put it out there.
That might just be raw shade I wanted to throw at Stern. Like, to be like, here's a Jersey Jack game that's the first new one we're gonna get. But it was also for a long time we didn't want to buy these. I mean, we of course have to buy Stern stuff, but we didn't like the rehashed intellectual property. We loved these pinballs that told stories. Like, to me, Pinbot next to Bride of Pinbot, playing each one of them and getting this
that's super fun.
I'm like, wow, they created something here. Whereas when I play Star Wars Stern and they have the callbacks to the original trilogy and they have the action, I'm like, this is cool and all, but it feels so.
I've literally played that table before.
I've lived
it. Well, I haven't played the table design, but I've played the Star Wars trilogy from the 90s.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, so many Star Wars pinballs exist, and so it's just I know that property so well that I'm not discovering anything. And I guess there's some nostalgia aspect to it, but I don't know. I like new stuff. I like interesting stuff. So that's why I think I complain so much. I don't know. We're trying to be more positive here.
Well, there you go. There's our positive take on pinball. Join us next week as we go into part 18 of We Hate Stern.
Oh, no.
I actually don't hate Stern.
No, I don't think anyone
hates them. Love hate.
We're big on giving credit where credit's due, and Stern deserves a lot of credit for where pinball is right now. But one new game, one new property. That's it. That's all I want. Stern to do it once.
Whoa, Nelly 2. Well,
oh, damn it. I forgot about it again.
Until next week when we actually go into Mailbag Season 12. Let's start wrapping it up. I am Chris Delp, the community liaison for Free Play Arcade.
I am Arthur Williams, the other community liaison for Free Play Arcade.
I am the original title of Whoa Nelly, back when it still had the juicy melons. So we're signing off. I will go grow my hair out, and we'll be back next time.
Subscribe now. Hit the bell icon.
Bye. Thanks for watching.
Thanks, Jaden.